have we ever not winged it? I mean, come on.
Welcome to Focus on the Beer. Join us as we explore the craft brewing scene here in Colorado Springs.
We're live from Urban Animal Beer Company down here off Star Ranch Road in 115. The place is basically ready to go. They just need to put their taps in and brew some beer.
Maybe move that one table saw. Actually, that's a miter saw, not a table saw, but I digress.
Yeah, I think that's just for the kids.
Well, you know, kids need something to do at a brewery. That makes sense.
But anyways, we're sitting down with Mike Santan, who pretty much I think everyone knows.
But in case you
don't,
Mike of Ironbird fame, Mike of
just,
Metric
I think
fame,
just Color Springs Brewing fame.
Brewing all over the place. He's been at Pike's Peak and Jack of All Trades, Master of All Trades.
At Red Lake, like 9 months at Red Lake.
That's right, I forgot about the Red Lake.
I was about to say, you've been everywhere basically.
Just about, yeah, just about.
Well, welcome, Mike.
Thank you.
And thanks for having us here in your amazing looking brewery here.
Thank you.
Yeah, this place is fantastic. I wish it wasn't a half hour from my house on a day without traffic because it's
10 minutes from mine, so you can.
I'm jealous. Spend the night. I'm jealous.
I think it's a half hour from my house too, so I'll be making that commute every day.
Yeah, but, I mean, the facilities look great. I mean, fantastic little purple. What's the plan for those little purple inlays over there?
The color changes on those, but the idea is as we start to develop the different brands, we can actually put like vinyl on there and it'll be backlit.
Okay.
I don't know if you guys have ever seen anything kind of like that.
Sort of like little like art shadow boxes type thing.
Yeah, that was the idea.
So as your branding develops, you can use those to showcase
the
regular brews?
I'm not really sure, you know, just like all the other places that I've been at are opened, you don't really know what beers are going to take off. I mean, you have kind of an idea.
I feel like it's like with rock bands, like they have the songs that they think should be the hits, but then like some other thing gets all the radio play.
It's really similar. I mean, there have been times where I've been really unhappy with a beer and then it would like win a local award.
And like, then you have to keep rebrewing it in that same way.
Absolutely. Yeah. There was a beer that we brewed with the wrong yeast because it was mislabeled one time and I wanted to dump it. And Beans was like, let's just put it on and see what people think. And then they did like the bracket competition for the indie or whatever it was, and we ended up winning that with that beer that I wanted to dump down the drain. So
then you're like, oh crap, we gotta brew this again. Can we get that yeast again and do this the wrong way again?
Yeah.
Make it the right way? Well, so give us a little background into Urban Animal and how you got involved with the project.
I mean, so the concept itself is something that I've been thinking about for a long time. You know, opening up Ironbird, I was pretty naive. I knew I wanted to open a brewery, but I really didn't know exactly what it was all going to entail, what that experience was going to be like. I mean, I think that naivety was actually a good thing at the time, because I'm not sure if I could go back in time and know the trials and, you know, the things I was going to go through if I would have still done it. But, you know, I got into that, and you're always it seems like in this business, it's such a big undertaking that you've always got partners involved, and it's such a difficult thing, you know, I'm finding to find good partners. So while I was in that project, as much as I loved it, in the back of my mind, I knew that I was going to eventually do something else, and it was going to kind of be exactly what I wanted. You know, and I know I was a part of Metric, but really the backstory on Metric was it was going to be Ironbird location number two. Things started to kind of go south. I had to pivot really quickly because I was so deep into it, come up with the brand, you know, on really short notice, which is really difficult in this industry because everything is trademarked.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of even knew with Metric that it wasn't going to be my thing. During all those times since, you know, 2013, I guess it was when we started the Ironbird project, I was already kind of putting little ideas away, and the name even, you know, I had that name kind of in the back of my mind. And just over the years, all the little ideas, you know, things that I've seen at other breweries, I've kind of incorporated that, you know, and I learned a lot about how to design a space, how to design a working brew house. So just kind of putting the culmination of all that knowledge. And so, I mean, how I actually, you know, how this actually came to fruition, though, was just talks over beers with my friend Brian Bradigan. And we were just kind of, he's always had the dream to be a part of a brewery. He loves the brewing industry. You know, I think Colorado Craft was sort of like his connection to the brewing industry without really having the knowledge of how to.
That stepping stone, basically, for him.
Right, you know, but in the back of his mind, he wished he had a brewery. And so we had met, you know, lots of talks just over the couple of years, 3 years, whatever it was. And, you know, one day I was just in the right mood to entertain the ideas. I laid out kind of what I would want, what my dream situation would be for a brewery, thinking that there's no way it would ever happen. And Brian, being kind of the grand facilitator that he is, sort of put everything together, and it was suddenly feasible, and here I am now, about to open up brewery number 3.
He probably had the plan the whole time, even when just talking to me. He was just like, all right, get him in and totally onto it, and then just spring it and be like, hey, by the way,
yeah,
a brewery if you want.
I mean, because in the beginning, I was really against it. I mean, there was a time when after I sold out of Metric and was done with Ironbird, I thought I was just going to kind of be out of the industry. I had gone through, you know, some stuff, you know, and kind of blamed it on the industry, even though that wasn't really the case. But when you're just so close to it, it's hard to see the forest for the trees. But
can't separate the two.
Yeah, you know what I mean? You kind of like equate that with those bad feelings and, you know, the things that went south.
Yeah.
But how I kind of got back into brewing was through Chris Wright at Pike's Peak. He hired me on over there. I thought it was going to be maybe just a temporary thing. But as I got into it and got back into it and started to actually kind of learn things, because I had never worked in a brewery of that size, and kind of, you know, Chris really showed me how you run a brewery like a business, like the business side of things, and taking things very seriously rather than, you know, treating it like a party, which I'm definitely guilty of, especially Ironbird, just not knowing what I was getting into. And you suddenly get into this industry where having a beer at 8 o'clock in the morning is not frowned upon. It's hard to set boundaries, you know what I mean? But learned a ton of lessons, you know, made a ton of mistakes, but I think I'm better for it, a better person and a better brewer, better business owner.
Yeah, that's an interesting transition. I feel like a lot of breweries go through from that sort of infancy stage to, oh crap, we actually own a brewery, like a business.
Mm-hmm.
We have to make money at this. It's
absolutely
not just a license to print alcohol, basically.
you got it. It's really hard, man. It takes a while to figure that out, and it's an art to sort of hang out and drink beers and not get totally smashed. I know that sounds like a sob story, but it's a difficult thing to do, you know, it's a skill.
It is, yeah.
It comes with time and probably also, you know, calories.
Maturity, just knowing not to drink
that too, yeah.
Tons of mistakes and the shame that go with that.
Mm, good
the
point.
Memories.
Yeah, yeah.
So all the hangovers, you're just like, oh.
So speaking of a license to print alcohol, I think that's what you said.
I did.
How big is the brew system in this new location?
It's a 7-barrel brew house. I've got 4 7-barrel fermenters. I have a 15-barrel fermenter that is somewhere in LA, a 15-barrel jacketed bright tank, and 9 7-barrel serving tanks. So those are in a rail yard in LA, and they've been there for just over 7 weeks now, and we can't seem to get any answers on when we're gonna see it. So,
oh no.
Yeah, that's just kind of the state of things, and that's kind of been the story on this whole project. I mean, everything has been difficult, you know, in kind of starting a brewery in the rubble of a pandemic. It's been it's been tough. I mean, the supply chains issues, the cost of everything has just skyrocketed. I mean, the build out on this place was like at least double what it was for Metric. It might even have been more than double.
Wow.
What that was, just because the construction costs and the materials are so high.
Yeah, that's, I think I saw at one point that like just like sheet goods were at like 8 to 10 times the price they were.
So
everything you have to buy is...
If you're familiar with Metric, you'll notice that there's OSB, oriented strand board, like all over that place. And the whole reason I did that was because it was really cheap. It wasn't really like, oh, I think this is going to be the best thing to do. You know, and it was a ton of work, and we had to sand it all down and clear coat it. But now that would be like a luxury finish.
Yeah, right. you look at the Seven's Gate tap room by Cerberus. They did that in the whole interior, and I'm like, God, this is real nice.
Yeah. I mean, just the cost of it. I think when I was doing Metric, it was less than $15 a sheet. And the OSB that I had to buy on this project, I want to say, was over 60.
Yeah, like 65, 70 bucks.
Yeah. So that's, yeah, it would have cost a fortune to do that now. But back then, it was what I could afford to do.
I noticed you have more brick in here, or cinder block and hard surfaces.
Yep, it's just kind of went with some of the natural finishes that were already in here. Obviously, the big brick walls got the mural.
That mural's amazing. Who'd you say the artist was?
Mike Fudge.
Okay,
a local artist. He's in Falcon now, but does a ton of concert posters, and that's kind of his main thing.
Okay.
Super talented guy that I've known for a few years now, and he's going to be helping me out with some of the other branding that we do. The Crowler labels, once we get those, actually a portion of the mural artwork. So before he painted that, he did a full digital rendering of it. So we actually have a digital file of that, and you'd be amazed at how close it is to the digital file. I mean, he was here for a solid week, I want to say, and he had a helper kind of helping him fill in areas and stuff like that. So sure. It took a while, and he was really meticulous. And I'm really happy with it. I love it. I love his art. I mean, I think he's my friend, but he's also my favorite artist. I have his posters all over my house, and we hope to have some more of his artwork hanging up around here. And just through the years, as we develop the brands, you know, I want him to be the guy that's doing that, just kind of keep things cohesive.
Yeah, the mural looks amazing. So just for, I know you can't see this if you're listening, but as you walk in, the mural is off to your right, and the purple or multicolored windows that I mentioned at the top are kind of off to your left as you walk in, and then the bar is going to be in front of you, as well as the brew house. So picture that in your mind and then come see it for yourself.
Yeah, so I think that's the big question for a lot of people is what kind of beer is Urban Animal going to be?
So, I mean, I'm going to do everything. I mean, the reason that I got into this was because I love it all. I mean, I can find almost just about any style. I can find something that I like. I mean, of course, you've got to brew the bill-paying beers, you know what I mean? You've got to do the hazy IPAs right now, and it's not to say that I don't love them, but there's so many other styles that I do love. You know, back in the day, back during Ironbird, you know, kind of what we were known for was the West Coast IPAs, and I still have a soft spot for those. Hopefully I can, you know, bring back some of those old recipes too. Hopefully we can get, you know, propaganda back here. I know there's a lot of people that miss that beer, myself included. So we'll do that. You know, we'll do the stuff that's popular right now. We'll do, I also have a soft spot for like farmhouse ales, like grissettes, especially like the hoppy ones, saisons.
So when you say popular, you don't mean fruit flavored slush beers.
I don't have a slushy machine, and I don't have any plans on getting one. I don't even know where I would set one. I mean, all the different brewery owners I talk to tell me that I have to get one because they are like printing money, but we'll kind of see where that goes. That's not in my immediate plans.
It's sad, but true.
I think you can get them on Amazon pretty easily, but
yeah, I mean, it's like eventually you've got to just look at what's going to, you know, keep the doors open. So,
well, it sounds like based on that answer that a lot of this is like the culmination of what you've done before and what you've learned from those things that you've done before, both in the beer style, the setup. It's funny, we were talking, I think at Paradox a couple weeks ago, about just all the different bits and pieces that went into putting this together and how you, I think you said you basically sat down and wrote a wish list,
mm-hmm.
and Brian was like, all right, sounds good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I really had an idea of what I wanted and, you know, what it was going to take financially, what it was going to take as far as a brew house setup for me to do this kind of as a one-man show, you know, at least, I would say, at least for the first year. You know, so I've kind of set things up where I can run things back there with all the serving tanks. I'm not handling a bunch of kegs. I mean, that's really kind of the killer on your body, is just moving those kegs around, and I'm not getting any younger. So it's, yeah, really everything that I wanted. I don't really see anything that I had to compromise on. I mean, pretty much it's my dream brewery. I mean, I love it. But yes, speaking of which, we'll be brewing our first beer tomorrow morning. So we'll see how that goes.
What's the inaugural batch?
It's going to be a cream ale or a blonde ale. It's actually a version of Bushwhacker that we used to brew at,
right,
at Ironbird. I mean, I love that beer, but also it's a really easy grain bill, and there's not a million hops in it. So if something wants to go sideways and we had to dump it, it's not going to cost a fortune, and it's, you know, there's not a ton of grain, so it's going to be just an easier brew day.
Right, get to use the system, get to know it.
Yep.
Figure out your efficiencies and all that fun stuff.
Absolutely, yep.
Well, cool.
So do you have a targeted opening at this point? Is there a...
That's the question.
the question everybody wants to know is how soon?
Yeah, I mean, so...
If this is the first batch, I'm guessing you're a month out, maybe two.
I could be open in a month. The problem is the serving tanks that are sitting in LA right now.
I could
potentially, and I don't have a jacketed bright either, that's also sitting in LA, but what I could do is I could leave one of the conicals open and I could use that as a bright. I don't have any kegs right now, so any breweries listening, if it comes down to it, if I could borrow some kegs from you, that may be helpful to get me open sooner. Because I could potentially do that. You know, what I don't want to do and what I said from the start is I don't want to open with, you know, a bunch of guest taps and none of my beers on tap. I do have plans to do some collabs. I've already talked with Paul over at Peaks and Pines and then Troy over at Cerberus. I just need to put the wheels in motion. After this first brew, I should have the time to get over there and really put that in motion and have some collab beers on too to hopefully fill out the lineup. You know, it'd be nice to have at least like four or five of our beers on and then maybe fill it out with some guest taps if we need to, but we'll kind of see. I guess it just kind of depends on what the finances look like at the end of the month.
So yeah. I know you said serving tanks are stuck in LA thanks to shipping. Right now there's this blank wall where the taps are going. How many taps do you plan to have?
So it's going to be, you'll see 15 taps. One of those taps is going to be for a purge line for the crawlers, so that we can package those right. So really there'll be 14 of our beers on at any given time. Now that number will fluctuate a little bit with serving tanks. It's always a little weird because you'll transfer it and then it's like an overnight carb kind of deal, and you know, not every beer is a hazy IPA, so sometimes you actually do have to wait for them to clear out. But you know, the hazy IPAs you can put on, you know, right away. But
so you're not going to have 14 hazy IPAs on?
No.
That's what you're saying. Okay.
That sounds...
Sorry.
That sounds like a nightmare.
All right, let's pack up and go home.
Work here is done.
No, it's... I mean, it's... It is a really unique and, like... The space feels mature, which is sort of weird. Like, when we went to the Craft Brewers Conference in Minneapolis... A lot of the breweries there, their tap rooms had this really airy feeling where the ceiling was pretty high, it was fairly wide open, they had a lot of garage doors, very similar to what you have here. And this has that sort of same feel to it, where it's not just, you know, the back room of a weird shopping mall where you're...
Well, I think it's that kind of the experience, too, where, you know, he's on third brewery in concept, third brewery build-out. Yeah. So he's got lessons from two of those that he's basically poured in here. And so, yeah, that maturity really shows through because of those lessons.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. I've just taken things that I've seen at other breweries. I mean, now that I've have just that experience of going to so many other breweries and in different states, kind of all over the country, you take a little, you know, there's a little bit you take from each one of those. And, you know, some of them you go to and you figure out exactly what you don't want to do, which is equally helpful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like the big menu board, you know, I will have like some paper menus, but I love the idea of having a menu that people can see from almost anywhere in the space. And you can kind of, you know, just use the main digital menu board rather than wasting a ton of paper and dealing with all that stuff. So just little touches like that and things that I've seen at other places.
And you put it in a prominent place where you can see it from pretty much any angle, any place in here. You know, there's nothing blocking it. Like, I was at a brewery opening fairly recently where I couldn't see the menu because there was a bunch of crap in between me and the beer list. I had no idea
shelves,
what they had.
Shelves, though, like built-in things. Like, things that weren't... I was there.
Yeah, like...
You sat at the end of the bar and you could only see half the menu because half of it was blocked by a shelf right next to it.
It's something that could have been controlled... and wasn't.
Yeah, that's kind of stuff drives me nuts. I mean, you can see there's a definite flow when you walk in the front door. You can see exactly where you're supposed to go order your beer. You know, there's so many places I go to and I walk in, and it just feels kind of awkward, and I'm not exactly sure what to do with myself.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like if you walked in here, I put this runway of lights in basically, and the order counter right in front of. The front door, which also has a menu board right behind it. I tried to make it as, you know, logical as possible, and then also incorporate some open areas where if all the seats are taken, you can kind of have space to stand around and socialize while you wait for a space to open. Whereas some places you go to, there's no place to sit. You just kind of feel like, what do I do?
Or do you feel like you're hovering over people that are sitting at a table?
Right. Yeah. So. I am a big fan of having like plenty of space around the seating too, and being able to get around. And I know the beer tenders also appreciate that as well.
But. Well, and it does look like you guys have a fairly decent sized patio, which, you know, most breweries don't actually start with a patio. They have to like convince their landlords or whatever to let them.
Yeah,
have some parking
space. Yeah. I mean, that was in the plans from the very beginning. I mean, it was a little bit more elaborate on the. Original prints.
It always is.
Yeah, it was way more elaborate, but it just made sense to pour a patio out there, build that railing. You know, it's more of a privacy railing because, you know, you kind of are sitting in a parking lot, but with that railing I put up, when you sit down, it kind of feels a little bit more private. And with the view of Cheyenne Mountain, I felt that would have been a shame to not take advantage of that.
Yeah.
Is there some plan for, I mean, like right now, coming out of the end of summer, it's maybe less of a concern, but next summer, some kind of shade is going to be...
Yes.
So what's the plan for that?
So I have plans to build kind of a pergola-type structure. Mm-hmm. I also want to do some planter boxes on the inside around there to just kind of have something that grows up a little bit higher, gives you a little bit more privacy, and again, doesn't feel like you're sitting in a parking lot. But yeah. Definitely want to do something like that. That's kind of a phase two type deal, but... Oddly enough, there's not a ton of phase two stuff with this brewery, whereas at other breweries, there was always a huge list. And
man, you got it all in phase one. I mean, it really does look great.
Thank you. Yeah, it's I'm really happy with it. Like I said, it's my dream brewery.
Yeah, I love that the wall that you walk up upon, like when you're coming up to the brewery, at you know when it's a nice day out. There's going to be three huge sections that will be wide open.
That was the idea, yeah. When all the garage doors are open, it just feels like an open wall, like you're outside. So.
And that's what I loved about the breweries in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Especially the ones in Minneapolis, is a lot of them, their main wall that people would walk up where the main entrance was, had three or four huge garage doors. So that, you know, at that time when we went in, it was May, so it was nice weather. it's just wide open. And even when there's a lot of people in there, that open wall makes it feel less crowded.
Definitely, yeah. I love that. And that's, you know, I've seen that at other breweries too. I definitely didn't invent the garage door at the brewery.
What not?
But yeah, I love it. You know, I'm more of a, I like the patios at the breweries, but also kind of being a beer geek, I also hate, you know, light struck beer too. So it's nice to kind of sit by the garage door, but not actually have your glass get hammered by sunlight.
Yeah.
Especially a nice IPA or something like that. Yeah. Because yeah, it can get ruined pretty quickly.
Oh, someone thinks they're coming. It's probably a daily thing for you guys.
Vince, I don't know who that is, dude. I have no idea.
Are you guys open?
He just closed the door and it locked on.
Yeah, we'll have to let Vince back in, but that's all right.
Yeah, if he struggles with it for a minute, he'll have a little bit of entertainment. Works out well. I mean, I can see why people would be confused. I mean, it does look complete if you don't count the scaffolding over there and the saw in that corner. I mean, it's very polished, very much looking like...
It looks more complete than a lot of breweries sometimes do months after opening.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few odds and ends I got to finish up out here, but the plan is to get those fermenters full, whether it be 3 or 4, depending on... I feel like we're going to get those serving tanks or not, if I get some kind of update. But once I get those full, then I can focus my attention back out here on the tap room and finish that up. Because all the finish work, you know, actually in all the tap rooms was kind of mostly my doing.
Mike's job.
My background is in construction and finish carpentry pretty much. But I learned kind of all the phases back when I was doing that. So, yeah, so when you come in, you know, any seating that you see, you know, besides the chairs, like I built all the booths, I did all the upholstery, built all the tables, I built out that fancy wall with the light up windows. And
well, the one wall that I really want to call attention to is the bench seat along the mural wall. I know that Goat Patch did that in their brewery, and it's one of the most popular places for people to sit because you can be a group of 2 people there or 10 people and just sort of fit everyone in there. So I just want to call it out. You'll see it when you get here, but I think we need to move. We've beat around the bush about the space and all the cool things they've done, but I know that they've got a couple things that they're trying to do to get you as a listener and a beer consumer to be able to drink their beer. So you got like founders mugs that are available right now?
Yeah, so that is, I don't even know exactly if they are available or not. I've had my head down kind of back in the brew house getting that all done. That's more of a Brian thing, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's a go now because we have all the mugs.
He was either coming soon or currently you could...
That's definitely
line up for it.
That's definitely a Brian question. He was talking about stopping by, but
yeah. So it says more details to come. So we'll let everyone know. But
yeah,
they've got some really sweet mugs that have the Urban Animal logo on them, and it sounds like they're doing just 50 founders mugs. Are you guys gonna do a separate mug club outside of a founders mug club, or stick it to 50?
Brian has talked about, you know, maybe expanding that. I mean, I'm a really big fan of keeping it kind of exclusive, and 50 would be fine with me. But also, I'm not the
I like it actually.
I'm not the business minded one either. But I would, if it was up to me, I would keep it at 50. So
I'm definitely not slipping him a 50 across the table right now.
So I know you mentioned crowlers. Are you going to do any other to-go type packaging at all?
So it'll be crowlers right now. You know, when we open it, it'll be crowlers. Kind of one of those phase two things is a small canning line. So what I'd like to do, and the idea behind the 15-barrel fermenter and the bright tank is so that I can do double batches of some of the more popular stuff and can half of that and put the rest of it in the serving tanks. So eventually, I don't know when it's going to happen, we will have cans to go as well, and there's actually a spot over in that corner where the to-go cooler will go. But yeah, to start out with, it'll just be the crowlers to go.
Makes sense. Any thought for bottles? Like, I just with the cool artwork you're gonna have.
Mm-hmm.
I love cans, but I just feel like, and the reason I thought of it is I was, you know, with a limited founders program for mugs, to do some sort of membership where people could, you know, provide you guys with an upfront, you know, amount of money to then get, you know, bottles or releases or cans or something down the road, membership style.
Yeah, I mean, so...
Just trying to get you guys some business before you...
Yeah.
these serving tanks get in. Come on.
At Ironbird, we would bottle, you know, some of our barrel-aged stuff.
I have a bottle.
We did some of the wild beer, and then we did, you know, some of the bourbon barrel, some of the clean, dark barrel-aged stuff.
That's what I have, I think.
I have a soft spot for that, for the big clean barrel aged stuff and the whiskey barrels. So we'll do stuff like that. And yeah, the only way to package those in my mind is to put them in bottles. You know, if you're not putting it on tap. So I'm sure we will have some limited edition bottles. But I do want to, you know, in the wintertime, and I don't know if we'll have enough time to do the barrel aged stuff. For this winter, I'll try my best to get some barrels in here, but I do have a spot set aside back there specifically for barrels. They'll kind of be up against the window there behind the merch, stacked up high so people can see them. But
give you a little more privacy back there too.
To hide my mess a little bit, you know. I need an area that I can have a little bit messy back there.
Dual-purpose barrels.
Yeah, but I love the bourbon barrel stuff for sure. So I'm sure that stuff is gonna happen. Just like there'll be some cask stuff too, if you know, just for
what?
Even if it's just for me to drink, because I love it so much. I mean,
so you're gonna put an engine up there with the 15 taps?
So I have a beer engine still, and probably what I'm gonna do is something that I saw. I can't remember exactly what the brewery was called, but the guy had converted a mini fridge that you could put a cask in, and he had a beer engine attached to it, and he kept the mini fridge at cask temperature, and he was running a cask widge. And if you're not a beer nerd, you don't know what that is, but it's basically to keep the cask beer fresh for longer. It keeps a blanket of CO2 on it. So he was running all that stuff, the same stuff I was running at Ironbird, and you know, it was just like this modular beer engine kind of thing, because I don't have the cellar here that I had at Ironbird.
Right. There's no big dungeon.
Yeah. but I still love those beers, and those are the beers that got me interested in brewing in the first place, was the English stuff. Timothy Taylor's Landlord, that was a beer that I really fell in love with, and that's why I brewed a beer called Slumlord. That was me slumming on Landlord. It was like the American version of Landlord. But I've also have a couple friends that are from England, who told me that it's really close. I mean, we were able to get the same yeast. BSI banks the yeast from Timothy Taylor, so we were able to get pretty close on that one. And I love that beer, and I love the name. It didn't start out being like a rip on my landlord at Ironbird, but it ended up kind of being that.
It makes more sense now that it didn't.
So prophetic.
For those of you listening who didn't get a chance to go to Ironbird, when they first opened them up, they had four cask engines. Beer engines. And they had a huge cellar that they were able to like pull the floor up and go downstairs. And
there was a little trap door there basically by the engines. And a beer engine is basically how you get a hand-pulled pint. So it's almost like a pump, to put it in layman's terms.
I have a funny story about the cellar door, if you guys want to hear it.
Absolutely.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, actually, we got sued because of that door. One of the food vendor sales guys, actually, Beans had that door open, and he had like kegs in front of it. We had things put there, but this guy was on his phone. I wasn't there when it happened, but I did have to go to like a deposition for the insurance company and all that, and he ended up getting a settlement, which was also just like another kick in the stomach at that place. But yeah,
especially for a small brewery, it's like, come on.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we had our share of little lawsuits like that. Like,
so is that what led to the beer engines going away?
No,
so you didn't have to go down the
basement. You know what, that really didn't have a lot to do with it. Really, it was getting to be really difficult to carry those down there. I mean, A right. firkin of beer is really heavy, and the stairs were really sketchy. And again, Beans and I, you know, weren't getting any younger. And we just kind of looked at the numbers, too. And it was there was like 20 people in town that just loved it. They just loved it. And they were very vocal when we took it away. But it was like, we wouldn't take it away. I mean, if this was a moneymaker, we would keep doing it. We stopped doing it because it just didn't make financial sense, you know. Yeah. And you would eventually get to the point where, even with the, you know, the cask breather and all that stuff, you get to the point where you taste the beer and you're like, okay, it's definitely...
It's been in the cask for way too long.
It's definitely been on too long. Yeah. Let's take it out, take it off, and we'll put it in back, and we'll drink it, or we'll dump it down the drain. You know, it was kind of that. So it was a ton of labor involved, and it wasn't really making a lot of money. That's why I think just having the one on, kind of having it modular where it's not really a huge deal. It's not killing my back. Again, there's a reason why I went away from the kegs, because my back has just completely screwed up, and my shoulders. And you talk to any brewer that's
sounds
been...
Sounds like you've been working in the brewing industry.
Yeah, you know, it's just kind of goes with the territory. But yeah, I don't remember exactly where we were going with that, but I love the
You know, just that's the thing, is that for those people, that those 20 people, mm-hmm. they now have something to be excited about for Urban Animal.
Yeah, 20 people plus... One plus me, I love it. That's usually what I drink.
I think we were probably two of the 20.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe not the vocal ones. We're sort of like, we understand, but
yeah, we loved it. But yeah, business decisions are business decisions. You're not gonna criticize people for doing what's right.
We could change people's minds, but it's, you know, the American market. It's just it's a different market. I mean,
oh, and it's even different now than it was in 2013.
Totally. Right. Yeah, like we were brewing hazy IPAs before it was cool, only we waited until the beer cleared out to put it on tap. It was like a bad thing. We were like, oh, we can't put this on. Oh,
crap. We gotta wait for a week.
We can't put propaganda on. It's not clear enough. Yeah. So it's kind of funny.
It's like, I was at a brewery the other day, and they had a Pilsner they were putting on tap, and it hadn't quite clarified. I'm like, I don't care. I said, I've had a Keller Pils. I'll take a pint. It was fantastic. And Ryan pinged me in the 2-3 days ago, he's like, have you had this Pilsner? I'm like, yeah, I had it like 2 weeks ago before it was clear, because it's really good. I'm like, it was really good before too.
Yeah, to be clear about that, that was OCC Brewing.
Did they call it a Keller Pils? Or
No. The intent was for it to be there. It's a Pilsner that they've done before, but they'd put it on, and then the brewer came out, and I was drinking a pint of it, and he goes, how'd you get that? I'm like, I don't know, they told me it was on, so I tried some. He goes, oh, it's not quite clear yet. I'm like, I don't care. It's a Keller Pils then. Call it that.
Isn't that what, I mean, isn't a Keller Pils just an unfiltered Pilsner?
Exactly.
So isn't it, I guess, technically it is? I guess Keller Pils.
Yeah.
So.
And it was the closest thing that I've had from a small brewery to a Stella Artois. Hmm. So it had this great German Czech Pilsner, like, it had the bite, it had the bitterness, and but it was crisp and clean. I was like,
yeah. It was very fresh in my mind, because they had Stella on like mega blowout sale.
Yeah.
And I got
it's one of those beers that I hate buying it because it's owned by Bud, but I love the beer so much that I'll buy it.
There's a bunch of it in my cooler at home right now because it was so cheap.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it usually doesn't, you know, sell as well, so they usually have it on sale.
Yeah. And it's funny because, you know, a brewer might say, oh, you know, it wasn't ready yet. If it was good when it wasn't ready, I can only imagine how good it is when it is ready.
Right.
You know, and a little yeast in the mix. You know, we've been drinking hazy IPAs. We are not worried about putting yeast
I'm fine into our face. Probiotics. Just keep the probiotics. Right? Like.
Mm-hmm. A little extra protein. It's fine.
Well, cool. Do we have anything else? I don't know if I have anything else. I think we're going to drink this one off camera. So
to yeah, for sure. like there's a camera.
I say camera.
But yeah, we're looking forward to you getting open. Hopefully it's, you know, I mean, a month is probably over promising, but you know, if you're opening two, that's great.
I think
good place to come out and check out in the fall.
A month is totally doable here. If we get the serving tanks.
Yeah.
Because if I get those in, I can stay here all night and get them cleaned up, get them all built, get them passivated, ready to go. And
yeah, let us know. I'll come over and help you.
All right.
Like, yeah. Honestly, if you get them in and you need help, let me know. And I'll jump over.
Sleeping bags and cots. It's happening.
So we'll just have to see. The problem is, I just, you know, when I call to find out what's going on, or actually when Brian calls, he's kind of taking care of that. They just literally say that they have no idea when we're going to see it.
Yeah.
It's like, They have no idea what's going on.
Between the lack of over-the-road truckers and you know, getting stuff off of containers
it's
in LA.
You know what it is? It's the railroad because...
No, it's a rail thing. Okay.
We got these other tanks. So these tanks were built in LA. For whatever reason, Premier does the bigger cellar tanks, I guess, overseas. They have a factory in China.
Okay.
So these I got off of a truck, and the trucking was fine. They were there at the same exact time, and they did that thinking that both deliveries were going to show up at the same time when they delivered my brew house and the 7-barrel fermenters. So, but luckily, I have the brew house all hooked up, and it's ready to go. But yeah, it's the railroads that are backed up right now, and what used to be first in, first out is now becoming first in, last out because they're getting piled on top of each other. And I think we got our stuff just got delivered at the worst possible time when things were peaking. Okay. So I think there are probably people who have gotten their containers that have been there for a much shorter time. So we'll just have to keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah.
And if anybody has any connections in the railroad industry, specifically in LA,
definitely
please reach out. We'd love to get those and get open for you guys. That's the only obstacle at this point. We're all totally licensed. The tap room is pretty much ready to go. So we
just got
to
seal the tables, basically.
Yeah, got to clear coat some tables, and then we're ready to go.
Well, one thing I will say, if you want to get some updates, Urban Animal's been really good about sending email updates to anyone that's on their email list. You go to urbananimalbeerco.com. You'll be able to sign up for their newsletter, which I think Mike writes himself.
I do.
And so you get some little bit of inside knowledge and then also a little bit of an update on what's happening. And we'll probably be one of the first ones to know. Mike, thanks for having us here.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Continue with the beer, but...
And always continue drinking beer. Cheers.
Cheers.